Well, hey there, and welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. I'm your host, Green Diva Meg, and I'm going to be with you for the next almost hour, so buckle up, Buttercup. We're going to have some fun. No, seriously, I want you to relax, chill out, and get ready for some great Green Diva stuff. But first, I want to rant just a minute or two. Bear with me, okay? I don't know about you, but I really miss Jon Stewart right now. John Oliver, Stephen Colbert, they're great. They're doing a good job, but nobody does an election season like Jon Stewart. And of course, this is the mother of election seasons when it comes to comedy material, right? I mean, whatever your political affiliations or leanings are, this is just crazy stuff. And, you know, if we don't laugh about it, really, I just kind of want to cry about it. It is kind of disturbing. So, listen, I don't care what your politics are, what side of the aisle you lean on, like I said, but I do please, please, please urge you to educate yourself on the issues and make good decisions, and above all, vote. There's a lot at stake here, really, there is. If your state hasn't held a primary election, get out there and help make this big Democratic wheel churn. It's a flawed system, perhaps even broken badly. But if we don't each step up and stake our claim with our votes, then we will definitely get the government we deserve. I plan to make some noise and hold all the candidates accountable as best I can, but especially the ones I plan to vote for. Not going quietly into this one, folks. So here are a couple of quotes about politics from a few worthy sources. One of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. That's from Plato. A nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves. That's Edward R. Murrow. Sound effects by Meg. We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. Thomas Jefferson. Yeah, boom. Anyone who is capable of getting themselves made president should on no account be allowed to do the job. I know that sounds twisted, but it's from Douglas Adams, one of my favorite writers. Okay, all right. Lecture over, moving on. So this is what's on thegreendivas.com right now. Green Diva Brigitte Mars offers some excellent ways to prevent or heal dry winter skin using herbs, vitamins, food, and of course hydration. She gives some nice recipes for a variety of things, including masks from natural sources. Easy, easy, healthy phase. We also have a post from the latest Greenpeace Green Divas and Green Dudes podcast, where Hannah Mitchell talks about two school districts that are going solar and becoming 100% renewable and efficient right now. They are saving huge amounts of money while enabling more funds for education and, of course, reducing their carbon output significantly. Really good post. It's kind of encouraging. You can kind of look at what your own school system is doing and what's going on in your state to help that. Okay, so this is what's on the show this week. Our feature is with Sally Ranney. Not only is this woman an award-winning conservationist, an environmental visionary and strategist who has served under three presidents, but she is also an amazing and talented artist and musician. I met her. She's on the board of many organizations. She started many. I met her as co-director of WECAN, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, back last year in the fall at the UN, and she so inspired me. So she's talking today with me about post-COP21, and she has a very, very deep understanding of what actually occurred there and what it means. So it's an interesting conversation. Very in-depth conversation, so I'm hoping you'll enjoy that. We have Green Diva's Green Thumb with Megan Kane, the creative vegetable gardener, on garden planning for spring. Green Diva's Eco-Sexy with Lindsay Hageman, who is the co-editor of Eco-Sexuality, When Nature Inspires the Arts of Love. Great conversation about renewable energy. Yeah, no, not electricity, but sexual and personal energy, and you're gonna have to listen to find out what that's all about. In the meantime, I'm hoping that we can play on social media. Please follow at The Green Divas on Twitter and Instagram. Also, please follow me personally at Green Diva Meg on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is The Green Divas Radio Show. And again, Green Diva Meg on Facebook. I really look forward to interacting with you folks out there. Thank you for listening to the show. Stay tuned and have a great green week.
The stage was set for a repeat of 13 years ago when California went through a massive rolling brownout due to a heat wave. But this time, they had made changes. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
In 2000, the Golden State collapsed under the weight of power outages when the demand for energy to offset the blistering heat stressed the energy grid past its limits. But when a recent heat wave hit, the simple, mundane yet effective changes that had been made proved to be effective at keeping California cool. By using high-efficiency fans instead of power-sucking air conditioners, keeping drapes closed at the hottest time of day, helped to lessen the strain on the grid. Planners had also installed natural gas-fired generators that took the load off during the peak hours, helping to keep the lights on. Simple steps can bring about big results. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Wishing you had a green thumb or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert green divas and dude gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips. Okay, so we're on again. We're getting ready for that spring garden. A lot of us are really getting itchy to get out there. So we're talking to Megan Kane, who is the creative vegetable gardener. She's a garden educator, garden writer. She has her own blog, creativevegetablegardener.com. And we've been talking to her about getting ready and what we can do for preparations. And I think today we're going to talk about prioritizing. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Meg. I love talking about garden planning this time of year. And I actually saw a quote on Facebook that ended up putting in one of my blog posts last week, which says, anyone who thinks gardening begins in the spring and ends in the fall is missing the best part of the year. For gardening begins in January with the dream.
Yeah, it's true.
So I thought it was a great quote because I think it's true. A lot of people do think that when your garden's put to bed, you don't have to think about it again until spring. But you're missing out on a really fun part of the gardening process, which is doing a little bit of planning in the winter to prepare for spring. And one of the, we're going to talk about ordering seeds. Another great way to think about planning in this year's garden is to think about the priorities. So before you start seeds or you order seeds or you go shopping for seeds, you want to really think strategically about your garden, because most of us don't have room to grow everything that we eat or even everything that we want to grow. I have a pretty big garden, but there's still things that I don't have room for.
Right.
So I teach a lot of my students that it's important to set some priorities in their garden. And one of the great ways to do that is to take a look at your diet and your cooking habits and your eating habits. So thinking about what do you buy from the grocery store every week when you go there and walk through with your cart, what kind of things are you putting in there?
Right.
Especially in the produce aisle. What are, can you grow some of those things in your garden? So I would say in our house, actually, tomato products, so not necessarily you know, fresh tomatoes aren't that great except for during the gardening season. But if, say, you eat a lot of pasta or you buy a lot of canned tomatoes, that could be something that you prioritize growing in your garden. You're going to grow tomatoes this year, and then you're going to preserve them. So in our house, we haven't bought a tomato product in many, many years.
Well,
because
so
we just freeze our tomatoes.
That helps you also prioritize what types of tomatoes. If you know you're going to be making sauces to preserve, then you may want more of the plum tomatoes rather than the big beefy steak things, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. Or if, say, you buy a lot of berries. Berries are really expensive this time of year because they're coming from pretty far away, at least in my grocery store. So I actually freeze a lot of berries. I mostly use my berries for smoothies, so it doesn't really matter if they're frozen.
Yep.
So maybe you decide you want to grow raspberries or you want to go strawberries or blueberries because that's something that you spend a lot of money on.
Right, exactly. Ooh, I like – you see, the thing is – for me, I get a little overzealous, you know, like you said, sitting by my fireplace with a cup of tea and the last – I got the image and I was like, yes. And then I just like spend hours and suddenly I have this gigantic garden that I can't possibly manage. And so it takes a little bit of time for me to prioritize and figure out what can I do, what am I – what does my property lend itself well to, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can kind of think strategically and lots of questions that you can ask yourself. Certainly think, what do you have success with? What do you have room to grow? I also tell people to think about, you're thinking about what you buy at the grocery store, but then think about what kind of meals do you make over and over again? So in our house, we make a lot of beans and rice, especially in the winter. It's a nice, quick recipe that we know that we'll have leftovers to take to work for lunch. And
exactly.
So we definitely prioritize some of those ingredients. So onions and garlic go in there. Salt, we usually make salsa. We grow and freeze some peppers and some corn.
Yes.
And so a lot of times in the winter when we're making beans and rice, we're just grabbing a whole bunch of things that we grew the previous year, throwing them in the pan with the beans and rice, and it's a pretty quick meal.
Oh, I'm getting so hungry suddenly.
so think about some of the meals that you cook week to week and deconstruct some of those meals. Are there some ingredients that go into those meals that you could potentially grow?
Have you ever, do you grow corn?
I do not grow corn because you need a pretty big swath of corn for it to pollinate itself. So a lot of times you'll read that you need about 5 feet by 5 feet block. I live in corn country in Wisconsin.
Oh, right.
So there's actually tons of people at the farmer's market that grow corn in my area.
Okay.
And there's a few people that do it organically.
And maybe
that's
the other thing. Like, I think about, like, okay, I don't have – right now I'm actually all in containers on my deck for a number of reasons. So, you know, maybe not carrots, but I know that I have a farmer's market that I can get some great organic local carrots.
I think that's a good point. That's another way to think about your priorities. What can you get locally, and what's less expensive?
Right.
So there's some things that I don't grow because they don't cost that much at the farmer's market, and so I'd rather devote my limited space to things that are more costly to buy.
So it's a lot to think about. I know that you have a specific guide on your site, but that you will share something that will go with this post about helping us prioritize.
Yes, correct. Yep, I have I created a 10-step guide to smart spring planning. It's free. I know that a lot of people aren't sure exactly what they should be doing in spring to plan for spring. And so this walks you through 10 actions you can take to plan your garden for spring. Folks can download that for free at my website, creativevegetablegardener.com/planning.
And then, of course, I know you'll do a great post for us, and we will have that with this podcast, and we'll link back to the guide either way. So stay tuned, because I know you and I have more winter garden planning coming up in future episodes.
That's right. There's lots of exciting planning topics to talk about.
Thanks so much, Megan.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Diva's Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When Jonathan Scheffel thought about food waste, his wheels started turning, literally. Now, rain or shine, sleet or snow, Scheffel rides his bike around Chicago, towing a trailer. He collects food waste from residential and commercial customers and hauls it to a local compost farm. There, earthworms help turn it into a product that can be used to grow new food. Called Healthy Soil Compost, his one-year-old business is thriving. Each month, Scheffel collects about 3 tons of waste, keeping it out of landfills, where it would have broken down and released methane, a powerful greenhouse gas.
Well, as people started learning about it and becoming more aware how important composting is, I just kept getting more and more signups.
So many that Scheffel needs to add another cyclist.
It's been a challenge finding a bicyclist that is, I guess, as crazy as I am to get out there in the blizzard.
Crazy, maybe, but responsible too. Because biking enables Scheffel to grow his business without any global warming pollution. And since it inspires questions from curious bystanders, the bike also allows Scheffel to spread the word about food waste and how everyone can be part of the solution. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Being green can be so sexy. Well, at least you can be sexy and keep it green. Check out the Green Divas Eco Sexy podcast for ways to keep it green in the bedroom or wherever you like to have sex. All right, well, we have another marvelous Eco Sexy segment, this time with Lindsay Hageman, who is co-editor of the eco-sexuality book that we have referenced. We've spoken to some of the authors. There are many more to speak with. And it's interesting because while many of the topics seem similar, and people are like, well, didn't they kind of talk about that last week? Everybody's got their own kind of spin on things, and there's so much more. And I'm fascinated, as I suspect you are too, because we do well with these segments, to find out, you know, to really dig in and understand how sexuality connects to the environment, earth, nature. So anyway, Lindsay, how are you?
I'm doing well, Megan. Thank you.
And I really liked the title of our topic today, which was erotic energy, and as erotic energy is renewable energy and how that relates. So I'm like fascinated to hear the connection here.
Yes, yes. I'd like to start with really talking about what erotic energy is, because I think that a lot of people think about it just as something that's simply confined to an experience in one's genitals or an experience of sexual arousal.
Yeah.
And Eros, to me, is much broader than that. It is really the motivating principle of all life. And it moves through us and in us, but it also moves all around us and through all of nature and all of life and connecting us to life. And Sam Keen, who is a philosopher and one of my favorite authors, the author of a book called The Passionate Life, describes how Eros is the force that drives an acorn to become an oak tree. And so in that way, it's the generative, creative energy that animates and inspires life, and including us. And so including our very own sexual energy and orgasmic energy, that passionate impulse to feel alive and connected and in the flow of life, which is why I think that our sexuality is so deeply connected to our creativity and our imagination.
Really good description. Thank you. That was very, very well put. I get it. All right.
And so Eros in that way is constantly moving. It is cycling through us and connecting us to nature. That is, if there aren't things like shame or guilt that are blocking it, which is so very prevalent in our and our sex negative culture.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I've never heard that, sex negative culture. Yeah, that's kind of, and it's so, I mean, it's so, what's the word I'm looking for? It's so contradictory when you have naked women practically with little tiny pieces on their body selling cars or whatever, you know, so it sort of screams a certain type of, or what people believe is sexy and sexuality, and yet, and yet we're incredibly shaming. So I'm sorry, I digress.
No, it's a wonderful point. I feel like it's a whole topic unto itself in the ways that our sexuality is in many ways taken away from us so that it can be sold back to us. And that's certainly a major theme in ecosexuality. Yeah, and so sort of getting back to this notion of like erotic energy as renewable energy, that one of the things that I certainly find so fascinating, and I imagine that you've experienced this as well, and probably many of the listeners, is that nature and being in close contact with nature can really revitalize and reconnect us with our own erotic energy. That like feeling of the sun on our cheeks or the wind in our hair, feeling our hands immersed in, you know, rich garden soil, that all of this is connecting us back to the vital energy, which is our very source, which is nature. And when we are embodied in this way, we feel so vibrant and powerful. And at least for me, I feel so in tune with my own desires and my own cycles and my own erotic energy.
Yeah, and it is removed from this sort of marketing image of what sexy is supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to think this is sexy, but when you're kind of away from, you know, the visuals that the man-made world offers or whatever, you know, our culture. And and like you said, it's the sun. It's a very, very visceral and present moment with nature in that connection. I like this.
Yeah. And so in my mind, you know, I turn that around in the sense of, okay, well, if nature can inspire and revitalize me and my erotic self and really the core of who I am, not on a marketing level or of what the media thinks is sexy, but really like in my core, the most embodied and luscious part of me, that can I also use that core piece of me to help revitalize the earth, to help regenerate the earth, give some of that energy and infuse that into the work that I do in the day, my daily life.
So what you're doing is kind of becoming conscious of that energy flowing into you from whatever source, a natural source, and then kind of channeling it, not always, you know, in a fabulous sexual experience, but sometimes redirecting it into work with, you know, giving back to Earth in some way or connecting to other people in some way that's, you know, giving, you know, whatever. It's just a redirection of the energy. Is that correct?
It is a redirection of the energy. It's a channeling, a funneling of that energy in a way that enhances the things that I value. And in my life, that is very much an Earth-based culture, creating a gift economy, creating an economy that is much more existing within the bounds of our ecosystems than mining them and undermining them.
Well, and I think you used the word creative and to create, and that is, you know, associated with this particular energy, at least for me. And like you said, I think it is essentially a creative energy, whether we're creating babies or a joyful feeling and experience or creating a better world in some way, right? Or creating art. I don't know.
Very much so. And a lot of people talk about the idea of like moving away from a consumer-based culture. And for me, that inherently means that we're moving towards a creative culture, a culture where we are creating and producing the very things that we need in our everyday lives and meeting our core needs more directly through human connection, through connection with the earth. And this takes work. I mean, it takes energy and it takes work to create for ourselves. And, you know, I experience this daily because I live on a farm. I live with the land. I live in a forest. And that I know what it takes to wake up every day, more or less with the sun, and feed the animals and tend to the garden and that if we're wanting more people to transition into a simpler lifestyle,
right.
So how do we motivate this? How do we energize it? And sadly, at least for me, the environmental movement, while it did wonderful things in inviting us to live a more simple life, that it really didn't invite us to back into our bodies.
Yeah,
and it hasn't really invited us to enjoy one of the most simple and abundant pleasures that nature really has to offer us, which is that of, you know, sexual and even orgasmic connection.
Well, and I really love the concept of this energy, whether, you know, however it's used for healthy creativity, is renewable. It's kind of a cool way of tying it in, because nature is there always, like, giving, you know, like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, hug a tree, play in the garden, walk in the sunshine, whatever it is that we can renew. I want to do that. It's just a little cold today, so I'm running on low energy there. But I get energized when I talk about this stuff, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
mm-hmm.
very interesting. So
Yeah. So we can experience nature and in that way enhance our vitality and then use that vitality that we have to then invest it, if you so to speak, back into those very things that we're most passionate about. And so it creates this cycle.
The circle of life. I love
mm-hmm.
it. Well, so people can find out more about the book, which you are co-editor of, Ecosexuality, how?
At www.ecosexbook.com.
There you go.
It's also available on Amazon.
And then I think we'll probably have a post about this topic, and people will find that on thegreendivas.com. Thank you so much, Lindsay, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Well, thank you, Meg.
Turned on yet? Well, go to thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. To learn more about this Green Diva's Eco Sexy podcast and find other low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
I'm Ed Begley, and you're listening to the Green Diva's radio show, the entertaining source for low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green and take action for the earth.
It is my distinct pleasure to have an opportunity to speak again to the amazing Sally Ranney, who, you know, I was sitting here going through her website again, just reminding myself of some of the details. This woman has had an amazing career in advocating and championing environmental justice, a lot of conservation, a love of nature and conservation. She has worked in the public and private sectors, served under three presidents, conserved and saved millions of acres of land around the world, among so many things. She's the co-director of Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, which is the capacity I originally met her. She's also the president of, I can't even read my own handwriting. I hate it when that happens. American Renewable Energy Institute. Thank you. Well, I've got chicken scratch over here. But before we launch into our discussion, which is going to be really fun today, trust me, I want to mention that she is an accomplished and very talented artist and musician and composer. And I got lost in her website. I don't know how I missed it before. So you've got to go to Sally Ranney, RANNEY.com, and look at her artwork and listen to her music. I am just blown away that you know, I somehow missed this before. But her eye for nature and her description of the paintings and the drawings that got her attention, the descriptions are just beautiful. So thank you, Sally.
Well, thank you. thank you for going deep into the bowels of my website. There's a lot there.
There's a lot of treasure, yeah. So, yeah, read on, people.
You.
Go there. So, in the meantime, you have been, since we last spoke, you have gone to Paris for COP21, and so much has gone on. And I know that you and I spoke about how to rally women in particular. This is an important election. It always is, but it feels so much more important than it has for so many reasons. And how women can become educated, how everybody can become educated, but how women in particular can stand up. And of course, and you know, one of our priorities, I think you and I share, are environmental issues, climate change, climate action. But tell us a bit about what you know, now that we've had a little time since Paris, what are your thoughts about all of that?
Well, I think Paris was a phenomenon. It really was on many levels, because the language, if anybody takes the time to read it, read the document in full, which I have,
Yeah. There
is a tremendous amount of urgency. The word urgency is used I don't know how many times, but it is definitely very prominent. Mother Earth is noted in there, gender's noted,
wow.
Human rights, intergenerational rights, health is related to climate change, and of course adaption and mitigation, etc. It's very it's very pro mobilization, pro action, let's get moving. There are the indices, which are the national commitments that
Right. Each
nation, 196 nations, made actually prior to Paris, as to what they could do in reducing their emissions over X amount of time. And ours was, the United States was between 26% and 28%. Reduction, and that is also something that is referenced to in the American Clean Power Plan, which we know was just scuttled by a stay in the Supreme Court, and now depending on what happens with that whole debacle as far as the constitutional
rights. That's funny.
Rights.
That was the exact word, debacle, that came to my mind.
Depending on what happens there, that could be stalled out. There were 26 states and a couple fossil fuel companies that put that case together. And it's very, very unusual, by the way. I'll just say this quickly.
Yeah.
For the Supreme Court to execute on a stay, unless it's extremely urgent, like a death penalty.
Right, right.
So this is a real signal about the partisanship of the Supreme Court, and now we're 4-4, and it's going to be very interesting to see if the obstructionist of the Republicans survives.
Yeah.
And there is no, I know Obama will nominate, but...
Right.
You know, they have control of the House and the Senate, so they could, the Senate in this case, they could stall it out.
Yeah.
But the relationship between the Paris Agreement and what's going on with the Clean Power Plant here in the United States is that the Obama administration really does have a commitment to moving things along in this country as one of the big emitters.
Right.
And we do emit about 28%. So our target of the total emissions on the planet, so our target of reducing by 28 is a real thing. Now it goes back to 2005 limits, not 1998 or not pre-industrial, which is kind of a conflict with the Paris Agreement, because the Paris Agreement is talking about pre-industrial pre-industrial rates, but doesn't outline any global carbon budget.
Right, right.
That's a real weakness of this document.
Okay.
And also because each country could submit. It isn't something where someone is, the UN has a stick and says,
right.
Okay,
no one...
you are going to reduce by X amount.
Right.
You are going to reduce by Y amount.
Right.
It was a voluntary situation. So that is actually very, a very good approach to this, to this agreement. The other thing that it has in it, which would never have happened even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is that they call the ambitious agenda is 1.5 degrees, no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius rise in global temperature.
Right, right.
And 2 degrees has always been the number, and that's a political number, not a scientific number.
Right.
And so to be able to get the 1.5 in the document was really a great achievement, because it raised the level of understanding of how critical everything is. And that was the island states. They weren't going to put that. I was in La Bergé, where all the negotiations were going on. They weren't going to do that.
Hmm.
They were just going to let the island states just kind of hang out there and then drown.
Right, exactly.
And so, so there was enough coalescing with the island nations, and some very powerful, compelling speeches on the part of the heads of states of these countries. My God, you can't just let this portion of humanity just disappear.
No, and I was pretty impressed with my understanding and what I had read of what Obama said, and he did show quite a bit of passion, and it's my understanding that he is very passionate about rallying not only the United States, obviously, but other countries to step up and be responsible.
Right, exactly. And the way it's worded is everybody has common but differentiating responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that's a really key language, because every nation has different challenges to to getting there in their emissions reductions. The other, the couple other pieces that are so key here are the climate fund, the Green Climate Fund, and getting that up to $100 billion a year, primarily contributions from the developed countries for the developing countries to be able to leapfrog over a carbon-based economy and go from where they are now to a low-carbon economy,
right.
Implementing a low-carbon economy. And that's a tough one, because everybody is broke except for Norway and Germany and a couple other countries.
So,
but it is imperative because there is an exit strategy, there's an exit clause in the agreement, and that is that if a country finds that it cannot meet its commitments for whatever reason within 3 years, they can withdraw from the agreement.
Well.
Now, the reason that was put in there is to put the political pressure on getting the funding in place so that nobody has to withdraw.
Right. Right, it gives some time.
Yeah. The other piece is that which is really a good provision, is that it has to have to really be legitimate in the world. It has to have 55 signatures, and or that represent 55% of all the emissions on the planet. So, if all the island nations signed it, it would not be an enforceable
right.
document.
Right, it would be 55%, right.
Right, yeah. So they say 55 island nations signed it. So that means that the big boys
right.
have to sign.
Yep.
India, China, and the United States primarily.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's going to be a signing on Earth Day, April 22nd, at the UN this year.
Okay.
Yeah, when countries, Ban Ki-moon is putting together a ceremony, if you will.
Right, right.
And yeah, and I think that most countries are going to sign on.
Well,
you know, they agreed in Paris. It was a major milestone for the planet.
Well, I think it is. And at this point, nobody really, you'd have to be living under a rock not to understand the jeopardy we're putting ourselves in at this point. The planet,
right.
The planet will probably survive us, but will we survive our own destruction of our own resources that the planet so generously offers us? I don't know.
Right, but, right. Well, we're trying to protect ourselves from ourselves.
Yeah.
That's what the mission is here.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is a good first step. Now, the second piece, we were talking about women. Finally, it's amazing how much effort it takes to do the right thing.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah, gender equality is definitely mentioned. However, gender responsiveness to climate is not the way we would have liked it to be.
Right.
At the same time, there's so much other language that is good. The problem is that how binding is this? And of course, money is going to make a big difference on who can do what. But when you look at the large landscape,
mm-hmm.
we now have the Paris Agreement. We have a platform now.
Yes,
that we've never had before.
Yep.
We have the Paris Agreement.
Yep.
We have the Sustainable Development Goals. The content of that, which comes out of Columbia University and the Sustainable Development Action Network. No, that's not what it's called. I'm sorry. Sustainable SDSN. Sustainable Development Solutions Network.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
so many
Jeffrey
acronyms.
Sack,
yeah.
And Ted Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually Ted's brain child that just came up in an interview. Actually, an interview that I was doing, an armchair interview with him and Tom Steyer at American Renewable Energy Day.
Oh, okay.
And he was saying, we don't have a plan for the planet. We don't have a manual. We don't have a sustainability manual.
Yeah, right. There are no standards. There's no, yeah,
no,
exactly.
No standards, no, you know, no composite place where all of the potential solutions at this moment in time can be referred to and then built upon as we go. So SDSN, and they're now in, I got to be careful here, but they're in hundreds of universities. They have satellites all over the place.
Well, that's brilliant.
Some of the very best minds and people on everything from universal health care for every human on the planet
wow.
to biodiversity to you name it.
Wow.
It's a huge body of work.
Well, let's be honest. Ted doesn't think small, does he?
No. No, he never has, never will. It's impossible.
It's great, though. We need it. We need this.
Yeah, we need it. We need it. So out of that came SDSN, and then, of course, we knew we had to go to from the Millennium Development Goals to the Sustainability Development Goals. Well, SDN is the content behind that, and now there are 17 SDGs with 168 targets within those 17 categories, And so there's a template there.
Yeah,
there's
right.
a template for countries to say, okay, if we're really going to become sustainable,
right,
we're really going to honor the Paris Agreement. They've got some sort of a template now.
Yes.
To work with it. Now the other thing that the Paris Agreement has stimulated is hundreds of CEOs have stepped up and said, we're going to reduce our carbon footprint by this much, by that much,
yeah.
by you name it. And Unilever, mm-hmm. which is one of the largest companies in the world, Paul Polman is their CEO. He was a leader in that, and it started out as the B Team,
right.
which was, I don't know how many CEOs originally in the B Team, but Richard Branson was in that, IKEA, Unilever, et cetera,
yep.
several big organizations, and they wrote an open letter to Ban Ki-moon saying, we are not afraid, and this was before COP21,
yeah,
we are not afraid of a carbon tax. In fact, we want that. We are not afraid of whatever needs to be done on climate change. Well, hundreds of CEOs now around the world have kind of joined that movement and stepped up and are saying, we want to reduce our company's carbon footprint by X amount. Some are 10, some are 65.
And think about how they're not whining about spending money, or maybe they're, you know, there's a tiny shift in their profit margin. They are stepping up and saying, we're going to do whatever it takes because
yeah.
this has
yeah.
to happen.
And everything's going to take a while.
Yeah.
And that's the real Achilles heel in all of this is it was in 2011, where was that? Bali, I think, is when there was a real commitment to move ahead on getting an actual negotiated agreement,
right.
like the Paris
right.
Agreement.
Right.
But the idea started way back in 1992 with the Earth Summit. The
right,
UN Earth
right.
Summit in Rio. So, you know, that's a whole generation.
Yeah.
It took a whole generation to get to this point, even though everybody knew the clock was ticking. Well, why did that happen? Well, the naysayers,
yeah.
the skeptics, which now it's becoming more and more difficult. And tracking real quickly back here to the elections.
Yeah.
going on now, it's
yeah.
more and more difficult to deny climate change.
Right.
It really is. Now, are the Republicans going to jump on the bandwagon? No. Lindsey Graham, who's no longer running, and put his support behind Jeb Bush. He's the only Republican who has stood up and really talked about climate change, said it's real, etc. But, you know, he's been bumped off the stage.
Yeah, yeah.
As has
Jeb Bush by now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, nobody else really talks about it, although Trump did say something about climate change. He's not a hard, cold
denier.
A science denier, no. No.
But he is a businessman first.
He is a businessman first. Well, what I think we need is we need all three of the top runners
yes.
in the White House. We need Hillary for foreign affairs. We need Bernie for getting us on climate change and renewable energy
and social issues, yeah.
and political
yeah.
finance reform.
Yes.
And we need Trump to do the deals.
Wow, you're onto something, Sally. I really like this.
I mean, no one person can do it all,
no,
you know? So
no.
if one of those three get it, they should get the other two in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You
that
know,
would be brilliant.
And it would be a probably a pretty darn good team.
I like it.
You know, and women are, you know, going back to your initial question about women, there are some women's groups that are starting to come forward on some of the issues. The interesting thing is that, you know, you can't look at the women's vote or the black vote or the Hispanic vote as a monolith.
Right, right.
And I think maybe in past elections we've been able to do that, but not now.
Yeah.
Which we've seen in South Carolina. A lot of the black vote, of course, went with Hillary, but also a good portion went with Bernie as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is probably one of the most interesting elections. I'm just trying to
go back to
ones that in my lifetime that I've looked at. This is one of the most interesting.
Well, and maybe it always feels this way, but to me it feels like so much is at stake and how important it is. You know, I've got issues with all of these top running people, but I feel like even with my senators, my representatives, that I need to put their feet to the fire a little bit and really ask some hard questions and really, you know, make sure that they know that there are – and I think everybody should do this. Every person should really pay attention to who's running and what their policies are, particularly about climate change, especially as it relates to business. How have they voted? What are they planning to do? And, of course, for me, you know, women's issues and health.
Well, and also I think we're in a very dicey position with 67% of our assets in the hands of four large banks.
Yeah, that can't be
that
right.
That is not sustainable.
Right. No, it's not safe.
No, it's not safe. It's not safe. And so I resonate with Bernie when he talks about that, and I resonate with him on reversing Citizens United.
Absolutely.
And kind of getting things into financial order.
And real quick, and then we're going to have to close, but Elizabeth Warren, wouldn't like a Bernie Elizabeth Warren ticket just really talk about change? But
yeah. Well, it's obvious with Bernie running as well as he is and Donald Trump running better than anybody ever imagined.
It's kind of scary, yeah.
The American people want a revolution, but they just don't know exactly what that might look like.
Yeah, yeah.
But they know they don't want business as usual. They don't want the big political machines.
Yeah. I think the polarity.
Anymore. They want a Congress that really works.
Yes.
You know, I like John Kasich. I think he's
he's
a moderate Republican, and he has a track record, and he does support women. And women for 100% renewables is starting to gain traction. And there's also agreement among women who are involved with these issues on a carbon tax and keeping 80% of fossil fuels in the ground.
Yes, sequestered where they belong.
Yeah.
Well,
in the ground.
Sally, I could talk to you all day. I'm so glad you've spent some time with us here, and we're going to have to do this again because there's just going to be more to talk about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And whoever's listening, just a quick little plug, if I may, for America Renewable Energy Day. It's going to be held at the LEED Gold Viceroy Hotel in Aspen, Snowmass, Colorado, June 20 to 24. And our website is rday.net. And it is a dynamic cross-sector, multi-sector gathering of leaders from around the world. We have the president of Iceland joining us this year. We've had President Carter. We have CEOs coming of some of the biggest companies who can really make things shift in the business world. So anybody who's, and we have grassroots leaders and indigenous people. So anybody who's really interested in these issues from an integrated point of view and new strategic alignment, this is the place to come. And
well,
it's a lot of fun.
I'm hoping to be there myself this year.
Yes, please, 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 please.
God willing and the creek don't rise.
Yeah.
Sally, always a pleasure. Please, everyone, go visit Sally Ranney, RANNEY.com and read up on what she's doing, but also enjoy her art and beautiful music. Thanks again, Sally.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Green Divas Radio Show. Listen to the latest Green Divas shows every day at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on GDGD Radio at GDGDRadio.com or get the GDGD Radio app for free. Or access our huge catalog of podcasts on demand on your favorite podcast network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and of course, along with all kinds of great posts about living a deeper shade of green on thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.